Welcome everyone to the Score Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Boone, the lead fantasy analyst at The Score, and today's episode is presented by Head & Shoulders. Offense for great hair, defense against flakes. We got an old friend joining us today for the Week 13 preview show, and this is the first time ever that we're recording the preview show, and there's still a game yet to be played from the previous week. We're recording on Wednesday afternoon. The Ravens and the Steelers are set to kick off in about an hour or so. So if anything major happens in that game, injuries, huge performances, whatever, I'll cover that on the Score Fantasy Football Live on Friday. You can tune in at 1 p.m. Eastern for that. But today it's all about Week 13. And our guest is Jake Seely. You know him from The Athletic. He's been crushing it over there the last couple of years. He's a great follow on Twitter, at AllInKid. And if you've been following me for a while now, you remember Jake from the Rankings Reveal show that he used to do on the Fantasy Sports Network, which he was kind enough to let me join him a few years back for one season. That was great. It's nice to do this again and to catch up with him. So, Jake, welcome back to the show, man. You know, I debated asking you about your dating life because we haven't talked about this, but man, I find those tweets so hilarious. But we don't need to talk about that. It's great to have you back on the show. It's great to talk football with you.
No, I appreciate it. Well, the good thing is, too, is I deleted all the apps in August because I knew I wouldn't have any time anyway. So it's like, I'll take that. This will be a nice refresher anyway. I'll have months of not having to go through that stress and being yelled at because somebody didn't understand the word of typical versus topical. So that's it. But, you know, I do miss that show, Yumi Amini, doing the rankings reveal. That was a hell of a lot of fun. But I figure we're doing the entire show on Pittsburgh-Baltimore today, right? So it's all irrelevant come tomorrow. That's what we're doing?
Exactly. Like at the end of the show, I like to ask everybody. I mean, I sent you the show notes, so you know this. You've been on before. We do it every preview show where I ask about players who are being overlooked that week. And I wanted to mention Benny Snell because next week we don't know if James Conner is going to play or not. And I was like, I can't mention Benny Snell. He could go out and have something terrible happen, whether it's performance or injury. Like I said earlier, anything could happen in this game. And then that part would just be completely irrelevant. So it's the fun of the 2020 fantasy season, right? You never know what kind of surprises are going to happen. And maybe that's where we can start here because I'm curious about what is the biggest surprise for you in this fantasy season, which has just been so crazy. Obviously, there's been so much. It feels like every single week, we were talking a bit before the show about it, that it seems like every single week we do all this work early in the week. And then by the end of the week, things have changed so much because we find out that there's players who have tested positive for COVID. There's all this news. I've joked already that Saturday used to be the one day of the week where I could at least take half of the Saturday off and do something with my wife or with friends. And now this year, Saturday morning, we get all this new news, and I feel like I have to spend the whole day updating rankings. So anyway, back to my question, which is, what's been the biggest surprise for you in this weird season?
So there's two, I'll give you, there's two major surprises by me. So one is, I was a fan of Antonio Gibson. If you would have told me 11 touchdowns, I would have said, all right, six of them, maybe seven, are in the receiving game. I did not expect 11 rushing touchdowns and zero receiving touchdowns for Antonio Gibson. I don't think anybody out there expected that. And I was one of the people who say, like, stop with the, he's only run so many times in college. Like, but I did not expect him to be this much of a running versus pass catching. He still has decent pass catching numbers, but we know what McKissick's doing. But the one that I'm more surprised about, so I was right for the wrong reason, because I'm going to mention two players here. I was right on being one of the highest people on Keenan Allen this year. And why I liked Keenan Allen was for the wrong reason, because I said Tyrod Taylor is a one wide receiver type of quarterback, similar to Cam Newton. He does a lot in the slot. And I was like, Keenan Allen's going to be fine, everybody. He's still going to be a wide receiver one. There was a lot of people who didn't like him as a wide receiver one. It's like, Keenan Allen's going to be fine. I actually have probably 90% ownership of Keenan Allen this year because I drafted him in so many leagues in like the third, fourth round. But I was not expecting Justin Herbert to be this good. I didn't expect to see Justin Herbert until week 13 or 14. Obviously, things changed with the Tyrod Taylor injury. But even so, I wasn't a Justin. This is where I was wrong. I wasn't a Justin Herbert fan coming out of college. Admittedly, I was not a fan. I thought he declined in his final season against poor talent, defensive talent that he was facing in the Pac-12. I thought he made a lot of Jameis Winston-like decisions where I expected a lot of turnovers to come from. So while defenses have started to adjust to him these past three games, both road games have been a little bit of a struggle against tougher defenses. He's still playing significantly otherworldly better than what I expected, and he's actually made Keenan Allen even better than what I thought he was going to be. So I was right on Keenan Allen, but I was 100% wrong on Justin Herbert.
And I feel like the producers of Hard Knocks, if I was them next year, I would just be pumping the fact. I would be trying to talk directly to fantasy managers and say, remember last year during Hard Knocks when Justin Herbert went over to Keenan Allen and said, I'm here to make you the star. I'm here to get you the ball and all that stuff. That's why you should be watching Hard Knocks, right? If I was them, it's easy marketing in my mind for that.
100%. I think there's a lot. If Adam Gase isn't fired, I might want to see the Jets too. Like, I just want, look, I keep saying this on a lot of podcasts, my own and stuff like that. Is there a world, like, if I told you, Justin, there's a 5% chance he's pulling a Kaiser Soze on us and he's just throwing out the most ridiculous plays on purpose and he's doing all of this on purpose to get Trevor Lawrence and make it not look like, we're all just sitting like, Adam Gase is an idiot. And maybe it's just like, okay, I'm going to let you think I'm an idiot so I can get Trevor Lawrence, but look like I'm trying. And then next year, all of a sudden, this team is a playoff team. I know that's very slim, but would you give it like a 5% chance?
I mean, we're talking about surprises off the top here. That would be the biggest surprise of all, I think, ever, maybe in history, that one would be.
I kind of want it to happen now.
Let's stick on the surprise thing, because we got another one this week, right? It's been a season full of them, but we got another one this week with the news that Will Fuller suspended for 6 games due to PEDs, and that means he's out for the last 5 games this season, and he's going to miss a game early next season, and we don't actually know where he's going to be playing next season because he's going to be a free agent, so we'll see if the Texans bring him back. But the fact that they were talking about him potentially getting traded a few weeks back, that makes me think maybe they won't bring him back. We'll see what he can command on the open market there. But just focusing on this year, we can talk more about him in the offseason and what his 2021 outlook looks like, but just focusing on the rest of this year, how do you think this impacts the Texans' offense? Because Deshaun Watson has been one of the best quarterbacks in the league, especially in fantasy, since Bill O'Brien was fired. And you can make an argument that, you know, Fuller or Brandon Cooks, both those guys have kind of been his top target at different times here. But either way, he's without one of his two best weapons now. Does that open up looks maybe for Kiki Cutie? Will we see Jordan Akins get more consistent targets at this point? Like, you know, will Watson finally start throwing to his backs more, which is something I think we'd all like to see him do just a little bit more. How are you approaching the Texans offense with Fuller out now?
So I think it's going to be a share all the way around. I think that we might see a little bit more 12 set with Akins and Fells, or even Farrell Brown, who's getting used a decent amount now all of a sudden. So I think the obvious one is Kiki QT, but what I wrote up in the waiver column this week is, don't forget about Isaiah Coulter. It was a rookie that you heard good things coming out before the season started. Obviously, as you said, there was no preseason, so there wasn't anything to go off besides just practice and reports and stuff like that. But somebody that I thought was one of these sleepers of the NFL draft, who, look, he's raw. There's no question about it. Coming from Rhode Island, I mean, there's understandable concerns with him. But if you're sitting here looking at this team, QT replaces Cobb. QT does not replace Will Fuller. They're completely different wide receivers. If you want to replace Will Fuller, Coulter is the wide receiver who has the skill set to replace him. Again, I'm not saying go pick him up and start him this week, but if you're looking for, you know, you're going to ask me a question later that I have a different name for, but this is the super deep version answer to your question of the guy that can maybe surprise if all of a sudden we're in week 15 and be like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this guy is on my playoff roster starting for me. I think you could throw out Isaiah Coulter. I am stashing him everywhere possible. Of course, somebody like at this level could just be a complete bust and you're dropping him in 2 weeks. But I would take that chance because QT's the obvious one and he's going to see uptick in value, but I don't think he's much more than a Cole Beasley wide receiver 3. I'm hoping the most for Akins, honestly, because Akins at the beginning of the year before he got hurt was seeing some decent tight end use, and we could use all the tight ends we could get at this point, can't we?
Yeah, for sure. And Akins has had a few big games, right? He's shown that he can do it if he's going to get a big enough target share there. And we'll see if he can do it against the Colts this week. And on the other side of the ball there, going up against the Colts, we don't have a great read on their backfield, even at this point, even heading into week 13. It looked like Jonathan Taylor was taking control a couple weeks ago, 26 touches, 114 yards against the Packers in week 11. And we'll find out. I mean, it's important to know that he was just a close contact last week. That's why he missed week 12. It wasn't that he tested positive. And we have to know that with these different cases. If a guy tests positive, he's got to be out for 10 days. So he's probably going to miss a week, maybe 2 weeks. With this one with Taylor, he's already back at practice. So it looks like he's going to be able to play this week. But are you trusting him? Are you willing to throw him in your lineup? I mean, we've seen Nyheim Hines, we've seen Jordan Wilkins. All these guys have had big games at one point or another this season. It's really just another one of these hot hand situations. So does Taylor walk right back in to a big role after that big game in his last time out? Or do you think fantasy managers should maybe be cautious on this one in what should be a really favorable matchup against Houston?
Yeah, so there's a section of my waiver column that I started about midway of the season. I call it Patriots games, like Patriot games, like the movie. And it's because of the Patriots. What we've done for years has been infuriated by their backfield. And of these six teams that are there, until Miles Gaskin comes back, the Dolphins are there, the Bills are there, Buccaneers, Falcons, Rams, and Colts. And I do think Jonathan Taylor is the lead this week, but coming straight from the mouth of Frank Reich, he said that, hey, this is what we do. Actually, I think his quote was, that's how we roll, is they're going to do what's best. Like Sean McVay this entire season, we want Cam Akers. We want to see more Cam Akers. We think he has the most upside. But Sean McVay, as he always has been, he changes from 12 sets to 11 sets to this, you know, and then running back in this situation, because they're taking advantage of the best matchups. That's what NFL coaches should do. They're not, they don't have no obligation to us to give us the clear answer or consistently use the same guy. There's a certain argument out there to be made for just use your best players, which I will always make that argument. And I know that's a very strong one. And I think Jonathan Taylor is the best talent, but it's up to Frank Reich to have the ultimate decision. So yes, I'll put him in the RB2 conversation, but that's an RB2 conversation similar to Patriots, similar to, I mean, Todd Gurley, honestly, like all these type of running backs that we know the floor is 3 points, that you know that's what you're dealing with these players.
Yeah, I think based on what you said there, it made me think that maybe more NFL coaches need to play fantasy football because then they would have more stake in the game. Maybe we would see them at least focus on one guy in their offense more often. But I like Taylor this week. I'm with you, though. He's in that, you know, mid to low end RB2 range. It's hard to get him up much higher than that. But the one reason that I like him going back to that Packers game, it was the same reasoning, is that he tends to get the first shot at that hot hand in all of these games. And there's been lots of weeks where he hasn't shown it. But in that Packers game, he was able to show it. It was a game where they were able to do well in, and he got a lot of work there. And I think this one going up against the Texans without Will Fuller, I think he's going to get that first shot. Maybe even the week off will make him a little fresher too. Like we've seen that help different running backs, right? So it's a situation. It could be really interesting. The Texans bottom five in fantasy points allowed to running back. So it's a nice matchup. And then they get the Raiders and, you know, they get the Texans again. So it's a pretty nice schedule here for Taylor if he can establish himself this week and keep building off of that Packers game. Let's look at the Saints backfield here for a second, because their lead dog, Alvin Kamara, a guy who was just carrying fantasy teams all year, and now they've kind of put him on a leash recently, right? Like, now since Taysom Hill took over at quarterback, Kamara, 67 receptions through the first 10 games, and now with Hill under center, just one catch in the last 2 weeks, only three targets during that time, and these were games that the Saints won convincingly, so maybe that played a part in it. You know, they get Atlanta again this week. They get the Eagles next week. So these are more games that they're probably going to dominate. They might not need to keep throwing to Kamara at this point with the way the offense is built with Taysom Hill under center. Are you moving Kamara down the rankings? I mean, with this lack of pass game usage, it seems like it's a little harder to put him up in the top five, maybe even the top 10. Or maybe my question should just be, how far are you moving him down the rankings? Because for me, I have to move him down at this point.
I would say it's tough to put him into the RB1 at this point as a whole, because let's be honest, I'm going to kind of turn it around and say, take the name off the jersey. If I said running back blank on the Saints, even the Saints, on the Saints, but he gets 11 to 12 carries every single week, zero passing, we'd be like, okay, maybe a low-end RB2. And that's what Kamara is now. He's 11 to 12 carries, which he's been the entire year. That's still normal. He has one game, I think, where he got 18 carries or somewhere around there, like one big game of carries, and that was it. Outside, he hovers in that 11 to 13 range, usually around a dozen. But it's all the passing game upside. So with no Drew Brees, if you're telling me zero passing game work, and that's not going to really change much with Taysom Hill, now you're talking about what he needs to do is bust off a big play. And I'm not taking that ability away from him. That's why he's still an RB2. That's why he's not worse, because I know Kamara, if he can get into space and get to the second level, can take 140 yards in a blink of an eye. That's what makes him so good. But as we saw, Latavius Murray, and I'm not even talking about last week's game, because last week's game, you can kind of throw out part of it and say, it's an anomalous week for the Saints as a whole, because they were up so easily, so early, and it was just grind out the clock with Latavius Murray.
Yeah.
But between the tackles is going to be a little bit more Latavius Murray. So I think we're in twofold here, is a little bit more of a split with Hill under center and zero passing game work. I think he's now in the RB2. And again, he's only on the RB2 because he still can finish as a top five running back because he is Alvin Kamara.
Yeah, he still has that 3-touchdown, 4-touchdown upside, right? It'll always carry that no matter who's under center.
Let me put it this way, Justin. Rank him at RB12, you're either too low or too high. Like, that's it. Like, it's going to be one or the other.
It's going to be one of the extremes, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't have expected this at this point in the season, barring him getting injured. I know last year we saw him get hurt, and he wasn't as efficient down the stretch, but I never would have expected this. I mean, before the season, I read a column looking at players who are going to lead you to a title, and he was in it, and he was going in the middle of the first round. But my point was that he's a guy that had top three upside, maybe RB1 overall upside, and we saw him doing that for a huge chunk of the season, the first half of the year. And now, I mean, it's really dropped off here. It's unfortunate to see, but let's talk about some league winners now, because I don't want to talk about, you know, Kamara. I don't want to talk about it anymore, really, to be honest, because it's kind of making me sad, because I have him on a lot of teams because he was in that column. But I don't want to talk about guys like Patrick Mahomes or Derrick Henry. I mean, we know Derrick Henry every year seems to be a league winner. He comes on in December, and the schedule makers have been very nice to him this year. He's got a great stretch coming up. But if we're not counting those obvious names, we're not going to talk anymore about Alvin Kamara. Give me somebody who you think could be a league winner down the stretch here.
Yeah, so it's somebody that surprisingly a lot of people are picking up this week. I don't know what they were waiting for. I understand roster restrictions, but at the same time, it's been, and I'm not saying just me, the entire industry was saying, go pick him back up before he comes back, and he's back, and his first game back looks terrific. It's Deebo Samuel, and Deebo Samuel is a top 25 wide receiver no matter who's at quarterback, because he's the number one wide receiver. There's no George Kittle on top of it now, and then on top of that, they have Washington in week 14, which is a better defense than people realize, but then arguably the best two games set of weeks 15 and 16 with Dallas and Arizona. The only thing better that you can find than that is, oh, well, the Eagles face Dallas and Arizona, so it's the exact same thing. Or the Rams, who face the Jets and the Seahawks. Well, the Rams are obvious. I'm not going to tell you anybody, Cooper Kupp or Robert Woods, oh, thanks for telling me these guys would help me. And the Eagles, you know, I would like to say Jalen Reagor, but I just don't trust Carson Wentz and that offense. Just, hey, your league winner might be Zach Ertz and Dallas Goedert for that offense right now. So I think Deebo Samuel is going to be one of the ones that's going to end up have been on a lot of winning championship rosters.
Well, it's almost that he's matchup proof the way they use him too, right? It's not like a traditional wide receiver one where they're just going to line him up on the outside and he's going to have to go head to head with Jalen Ramsey or somebody like that. They're going to move him around. They're going to find ways to get the ball in his hands. They're going to get him into space. And that's why he's so valuable. And like you said, especially with Kittle out, and I've had a lot of people asking me about Kittle, whether I think that they should continue to stash him or go and pick him up if he's on their waiver wire. It just depends on your bench. If you have an open spot and you want to grab Kittle and you want to hope that he can come back for week 15 or week 16, and you think you're going to make it that far, sure. But at this point, I'm hoping that you have a tight end. If you're a playoff team, you have a tight end that, you know, is at least going to get you through here, a guy who is in the tight end one ranks. And at that point, I'm not going to shy away from that in order just to stash Kittle on my team. So it's all about having the depth there. I don't know what you think about Kittle.
Oh, no. So, two things. So I think the usage of Deebo Samuel, to go back, is Keenan Allen. Like, he's just going to get the volume. They're going to move him around, spends a lot of time in the slot. 2 inches shorter than the guys. Kind of a similar game than people realize. But I say that Deebo Samuel might even be the better route runner. But the George Kittle thing, I'm with you, because he wants to come back early. So let's make that clear first. He wants to come back early. This isn't his normal timeline. So he wants to come back 2 weeks earlier than he should. His normal timeline would just be done for the season, potentially week 17. So even if he comes back early, well, Saquon Barkley came back early last year, and we saw that it took him a couple games to get back to being Saquon Barkley. And even people who come back in their normal timeline, Alan Lazard, he's just finally starting to look somewhat okay this first two games back. So I don't know. I know it's Kittle and tight ends a wasteland, and you probably would want to play him compared to most tight ends, even in week 15 and 16. But I gotta say, like, I would have to be on the waiver wire looking at the Jordan Reeds and the Jordan Akins of the world before I would say, yeah, Kittle is somebody I'm going to throw into my championship game.
Yeah, and the same kind of idea, and that's why I'm mentioning, like, if you already have a tight end one, then maybe you're not as desperate, but if you are desperate and you're kind of just streaming right now, sure, the same idea. I get a lot of people asking me, you know, how should I stack my bench at this point in the season? Should it be all running backs? Should it be receivers? And I say, it depends on your confidence in your starting lineup, right? If you have receivers that you don't feel great about, then yeah, you're going to want to take some flyers on Isaiah Coulter and guys like that who could come on down the stretch maybe. But if it's the opposite, you know, your RB2 isn't as great as you'd like, then stack that bench with those high upside backup running backs and hope that one of them hits. So it's the same kind of idea with Kittle. If you're desperate at tight end, if you need a guy, you throw him at the end of the bench and you just sort of pray that he can come through for you in those final weeks. For me, we're talking about these potential league winners down the stretch and guys that we might not see coming here. I'm going to cheat a bit and say a few guys here, but they're all together. It's the Tampa passing attack. I think people are down on them. I know Brady hasn't been as good. The receivers have been kind of inconsistent, but they just played the Rams and the Chiefs. Those are two of the best defenses in the league. Now they get this bye to regroup, and this is what it's all about. They come back in the fantasy playoffs and play the Vikings, the Falcons, and the Lions. Those are all favorable matchups. I know the Vikings and the Falcons, they've played a little better recently on defense, but I think their list of opponents had something to do with that. And then you look at this Bucs pass defense, which isn't as good at this point in the season as it was early on. So that could lead to some higher scoring games. So Brady, Evans, Godwin, Gronk, even AB, Ronald Jones. I want as many of these Bucs in my lineup as I can fit. Within reason, obviously. You're not going to play all of those guys. But I want as many of them within reason that I can fit into my lineup. And I think it's just because the public perception is so low on them right now that, you know, you might be able to get them in trades. I think if your trade deadline hasn't passed yet, like, those are guys that people might not want to trust in the fantasy playoffs because of the way they played recently, but who I think can really come through for you.
Yeah, I'm all in on going with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I had somebody just ask me in the column this week and said he's on a bye and, you know, that kind of letdown game. Should I drop Antonio Brown for Kiki QT or something like that? And they, look, I'm not saying that to mock the person, obviously, because people are asking this question. And it's a valid question for people that, you know, don't know what to expect or maybe inexperienced in fantasy or whatever. But, you know, if you're going QT versus Antonio Brown, what's the, actually, one, the real difference in their roles and their offenses are quite similar. And then, two, you mentioned that schedule is the best for a quarterback. It's one of the top three for wide receivers. It doesn't get much better than that. So Antonio Brown could be a heck of a top 25 wide receiver with Godwin and Evans still getting theirs. The only difference I have since they signed Antonio Brown, and my opinion, Antonio Brown really hasn't changed, is that he's kind of a wide receiver three with a weekly upside for more. It's that I thought Evans might get completely left out, similar to Dak Prescott, mostly leaving out Michael Gallup. There was like a game or two where he flashed, but it was mostly the other two. And I kind of expected a lot of Godwin and Antonio Brown, but for whatever reason, I don't know how this happened. You know, maybe Antonio Brown's opening up the offense more and Tom Brady was just not willing to force it before. And now he's getting Mike Evans open, but he's going to Mike Evans pretty consistently. And he's going to Mike Evans pretty consistently in the touchdown opportunity department. So yeah, if you can find it, like, maybe I'm surprised there's still trade deadlines that haven't passed yet. I'm still getting trade questions. So
maybe I'm thinking more dynasty, because in some of the dynasty leagues, right, the trade deadline never closes or goes up until the playoffs. So maybe that's why I'm thinking that. But
I'm with you. Like, look, I'm still getting them. I'm getting people who are like, hey, should I trade? Blah blah blah. And there are people that are like trying to get into the playoffs right now and can't afford people on a bye. So Tom Brady, of all, some people are dropping Tom Brady. Don't be one of those people. I am with you on the Bucks. Like I said, I'm also, I would hate to trust Jared Goff, but Cooper Kupp, Robert Woods, 1,000% with who they face with the Patriots, Jets, and Seahawks. And then if you're desperate at quarterback, I might be willing to go Jared Goff.
Well, one more thing I want to say about the AB is, I think with a guy like that, in most years, we would look at him going into his bye week and go, okay, all three of those guys are healthy, so they're going to come off the bye. We don't know that all three of those guys will be healthy. With the COVID situation, you could have Mike Evans or Godwin or someone test positive over their bye week, and then all of a sudden, AB steps up. So that's just another added reason why, you know, a guy who is really the third receiver in that offense could have just a little more value in case something like that happens. But we constantly,
absolutely,
whether it's the COVID stuff, whether it's injuries this time of year, you know, performances, all that stuff, we have to keep reassessing where these players are at. And I know we joked before the show that that gets a little tiring for us as the year goes along. And this year it's maybe been even more tiring when it comes to that. But it brings me to another guy that I think we have to reassess. And it pains me to say it because I have him on a few teams, but it's Russell Wilson. The guy was just killing it in the first half of the season. The first eight games, he was second overall in fantasy points per game, 29.5 fantasy points per game. But then since then, and it's a small sample size, but since then, over the last three games, if you're looking for Russ, QB 19, just 15 fantasy points per game. Small sample size, we got to say that. And one of those matchups was against the Rams, so maybe we can give him a pass for that one. But with the way things are trending here, are you worried that we're done seeing Russ cook in Seattle this season?
So before I came on your show, I was actually looking up on Sport Radar, and I tweeted this out. The fact that I was already looking this up before even your topics. I read through the topics and then I forgot about like to scroll down and I realized there was more at the bottom. And I was like, oh, look, he's talking about the same thing. This is awesome. This is perfect. So from weeks 1 through 10, Russell Wilson in this offense was passing 62.9% of the time, averaging 32.2 points per game. The last two games, 51.2% pass percentage, 25.5 points per game. It's not just the Rams, as you mentioned, and it is a small sample. It's two games versus nine, so it's a big difference there. But also what we've seen over the last three games, the defense is also playing better. They don't need to as much anymore. They don't need to win games 40-30 as much as they did at the beginning of the season. So it's still vulnerable. I would expect better than what we've seen against the Rams, as you mentioned, because not all of their games down the stretch are as bad matchups as the Rams are. But I don't think we're going to see the consistent Russell Wilson throwing 40 times a game. Chris Carson's back and healthy. They don't need to do it. So that's the problem. Is we would love, as fans, fantasy owners, we would love to see it, but unfortunately, I think that Russell Wilson's going to fall back into the probably Deshaun Watson range, like the QB 7-8-9 range going forward.
Well, we weirdly saw the same thing happen last year, right? The first eight games of 2019, he was the QB3. The last eight games, the QB14. So maybe not as big of a drop off, but put him outside of that QB1 range in the second half of the season. So I do have some worries, but it's still just so hard to go away from him, especially with the matchups. I mean, the Giants, the Jets, Washington over their next three games. And I know the Giants, their defense isn't a pushover like it has been in previous years. Those are your Giants that I'm talking about, unless something's changed recently. Yet. I think you're still rooting for the Giants.
No, it's changed 2-3 years ago. It was as soon as the Gettleman came in, it was ban the Giants until they're on hiatus. They're not allowed back into my life until Gettleman's gone.
That's fantastic.
I root for the players, but as the team as a whole, they just screwed up. Like you could have got on from Daniel Jones, got rid of Gettleman, got either Fields or Trevor Lawrence, and somehow they're going to win this division at like 6-10. And and then Gettleman's going to get like a contract renewal or something.
Well, I'm going to force you to talk about them anyway here.
Okay.
Do you think that any of these skill position players are going to be startable if Daniel Jones is sidelined here? And I know the team's holding out hope. You know, they're saying that maybe he could still play this week, but based on that hamstring injury last week, I think he's probably going to miss at least a game. Are you still willing to play any of these guys now that you're rooting for the players and not the team here? Are you still willing to play any of them with Colt McCoy under center?
I am. I'm still willing to play the same three I've been willing to play. I wasn't willing the first two games, but Wayne Gallman at this point, because I just made a case to play Frank Gore last week and that paid off because it's volume. If you're going to tell me a running back's getting 18 to 20 touches and getting the goal line work when they're there, they gave him four straight carries, fourth down, he scored the touchdown. And I'm not saying he's going to keep scoring a touchdown every single game, but he is the guy. If you told me average running back getting 18 plus touches, he's going to be at least in the low-end RB2 conversation, no matter who's under center. So, well, unless it's Kendall Hinton. So then that's a different story. But, you know, Colt McCoy's a capable quarterback, but what we also know about him is one of the lowest yards per attempt. So the same two people from before, Evan Engram, Sterling Shepard. Darius Slayton had fallen off this year. Dan Dugan for The Athletic actually thinks there might be something possibly wrong. He's speculating, but the usage for the last 2 weeks, just not getting targeted last week, there might be something where he's, you know, late kind of tweaked injury that he's just playing through. But in any case, whether it was Daniel Jones or now Colt McCoy, his big game potential has kind of been lost this year. And Daniel Jones was peppering Evan Ingram most games. So it's Evan Ingram, Sterling Shepard, and Wayne Gallman. They're all in. Well, Evan Ingram is tight end one discussion. Sterling Shepard's a mid-low wide receiver three, and Gallman's a mid-low running back two. But yeah, they're still usable. It's not exciting, but neither is Frank Gore. You kind of could use them right now.
It's true. It's sadly true. We'll get you out of here on this one. It's the same question we end every preview show with. You've been on before, so you know it. Which player or players, if you have more than one, are being overlooked in week 13? And this is more about a respect thing. So it could be high-end guys who aren't getting ranked high enough. It could be lower-end guys who aren't on people's radar. You can kind of take it in a lot of different directions. I'll let you go first. Who you got?
Okay, so I'll give you two. How about that? I'll give you two combined. Because my rankings column this week, so I do sleepers, and then I do a deep dive. I call it chasing the river because of my poker background. So all three of the receivers this week are slot receivers in super advantageous matchups. So I'll give you the one obvious-ish name and then the one less obvious-ish. So just making that word up on the spot here. So the more obvious one is CeeDee Lamb. We know he's the slot guy. Well, the good thing about facing the Ravens, and this is before they're even facing Deontay Johnson and Juju Smith-Schuster, as you mentioned, while we're doing this. So this number could go up. They could hit the number one spot. Right now, they are number two and allowing 40.7% of receiver yards to the slot this year. That's where you beat the Ravens. So, and like I said, Juju Smith-Schuster and Deontay Johnson might push that number up before this game is over. So CeeDee Lamb versus the slot against the Ravens next week. I think people are going to be worried about the matchup. Don't be for CeeDee Lamb. And then the same situation, another slot guy. It's very hard to predict with Hunter Renfro, Henry Ruggs, and Nelson Aguilar kind of almost mixing and matching at this point, and Derek Carr is coming off a miserable game. But the Jets, Keenan Allen, 16-145 and a touch to them. And now, okay, sure, it's not Keenan Allen. Let's go with the other guys. How about Jacoby Myers, 12-169? How about Cole Beasley, 11-112? The slot is where you we destroy the Jets overall, but the slot is where you really do it. So slot wide receivers in week 13, Justin.
I like it. I like it a lot. For me, I'll go with one that's a little higher up, David Montgomery. You never really feel that good. What's that?
He's on my sleeper list this week. Go. Okay. I love it.
I mean, you never really feel that good having him in your starting lineup, but he's coming off that 100-yard game against the Packers. Packers got a weak run defense. Who's he going up against this week? The Lions. They're giving up the most fantasy points to running backs this year. So Montgomery's actually in my top 15 this week.
I have him there too, but doesn't that just feel wrong? Like
it feels totally wrong. It feels like, yeah, like we're going to regret that one early next
week.
It's
putting Jared
Cook
inside the top 10 at tight end. That's what it is.
Yeah, I would also keep the guys, and these ones maybe are a little more obvious, but I keep these guys coming back from injury, and we don't know if they're going to be back yet, but we think they're going to be back this week. Guys coming back from injury like DeAndre Swift and Miles Gaskin, you get those guys back in your lineup. If they're healthy, they're automatic plays. And then I can bookend the podcast a little bit here. We'll go back to that Saints backfield. We talked about it earlier. Latavius Murray, for me, is a top 25 running back this week. With the way that New Orleans offense is running with Taysom Hill at quarterback, with the matchups that they've had recently, we talked about them earlier, the Saints don't need to run Alvin Kamara into the ground in these games. So why not let Murray handle a bigger workload? And he's coming off a 20-touch, 126-yard, two-touchdown game against the Broncos. And then the week before, he put up 85 total yards on 14 touches against the Falcons, and now he gets a chance to face that same defense again this week. Saints are favorites on the road in Atlanta. Should be plenty of positive game script for them there. Murray isn't just a high-end backup at this point. He's a fantasy starter in week 13, and I don't want to spend the whole end of the show here just rattling off a list of names, so I'll go quick on a couple more. If Ryan Fitzpatrick gets the nod for Miami, you have to treat Devontae Parker as a top 15 receiver. Mike Gesicki as a tight end one at this point. Fitzpatrick gets those guys the ball. With John Brown out of the lineup, I'm going back to Cole Beasley, to Gabriel Davis. And I'm willing one more time to go to the well here for Henry Ruggs. The talent is there. He had his best game in a while last week, 56 yards. Also came really close to a touchdown in that one. So the breakout game is coming for him, and the Jets should definitely help with that. Their secondary, one of the worst in the league.
Yeah, no question about that.
On that note, that is all for today's show. Jake and I are going to go watch this rare Wednesday afternoon football game. Make sure you're following Jake on Twitter at AllInKid and checking out all his stuff over at The Athletic. Jake, you know that I always appreciate you taking the time to jump on, man, especially this year when we are already so tired in December, when we just want the season to be over. So I always thank you for that, dude. Why don't you let everybody know what you're working on right now and what the schedule is for all your posts that go up?
Yeah, I appreciate that. Everything over at The Athletic. If you missed out on the $1 a month for 12 months offer, there's still offers out there, so you can go check them out. But like Justin, I have stuff coming out every single day. The waivers on Tuesday morning, rankings Wednesday morning, and then adjusted fantasy points allowed is updated usually somewhere on Wednesday. But as Justin mentioned, it's not yet because I don't have the information from the game. So it'll be probably Thursday this week. So normally on Wednesday. But yeah, the podcast too, everything's over there. I, like you, like Justin, I'll tweet it out. Just at All in Kids, the easiest way to find it. And yeah, like I said, this is a long time coming. I miss doing the show. It's good to talk again.
For sure, man. For sure. As for me, I'm going to be back doing the live show that I mentioned earlier, Friday, 1 p.m. Eastern, going over the latest injury news, the start-sit options, and answering all your questions, or at least as many as I can during the show. But until then, big thanks again to Jake. Big thanks to everybody out there for listening, and we will see you next time.
Said leave on time, my baby, said leave on time. Leave on time with me.